78. The Revel. A coalition has been formed among Scholar Radiants. Our goal is to deny the enemy their supply of void light. This will prevent their continuing transformations and give us an edge in combat. From Drawer 3020, Second Emerald. Vale had exposed herself. That nagged at her as the wagon, filled with spoils from the robbery, rolled toward the appointed meeting place with the cult. She nestled in the back, against a bag of grain, feet up on a paper-wrapped haunch of cured pork. Swiftspren was Vale, as she was the one who had been seen distributing the food. Therefore, to enter this revel, she would have to go as herself. The enemy knew what she looked like. Should she have created a new persona, a false face, to not expose Vale? But Vale is a false face, a part of her said. You could always abandon her. She strangled that part of her, smothered it deep. Vale was too real, too vital to abandon. Shallan would be easier. First moon was up by the time they reached the steps to the Oathgate platform. Vatha rolled the wagon into place and Vale hopped off, coat rippling around her. Two guards here were dressed as flamespren, with golden and red tassels. Their muscular builds and those two spears set near the steps hinted these men might have been soldiers before joining the cult. A woman bustled between them, wearing a flat white mask with eye holes but no mouth or other features. Vale narrowed her eyes. The mask reminded her of Iyatil, Marais's master in the Ghost Bloods, but it was a very different shape.
You were told to come alone, Swiftspren, the woman said.
You expected me to unload all of this on my own? Vale waved to the back of the wagon.
We can handle it, the woman said smoothly, stepping over as one of the guards held up a torch, not a sphere lamp, and the other lowered the wagon's tailgate.
Vale turned sharply. That hum. The guards started unloading the food. You can take all but the two bags marked with red, Vale said, pointing. I need those for my rounds visiting the poor.
I wasn't aware this was a negotiation, the cultist said. You asked for this. You've been leaving whispers through the city that you want to join the revel.
Wits work, apparently. She'd have to thank him. Why are you here? The cultist asked, sounding curious.
What is it you want, Swiftspren, so-called hero of the markets?
I just keep hearing this voice. It says that this is the end, that I should give in to it, embrace the time of Spren. She turned toward the Oathgate platform. An orange glow was rising from the top. The answers are up there, aren't they? From the corner of her eye, she saw the three nod to one another. She'd passed some kind of test.
You may climb the steps to enlightenment, the cultist in white told her. Your guide will meet you at the top.
She tossed her hat to Vatha and met his eyes. Once the unloading was through, he'd pull away and set up a few streets farther off, where he could watch the edge of the Oathgate platform. If she had trouble, she would throw herself off, counting on Stormlight to heal her after falling. She started up the steps.
Kaladin normally liked the feeling of the city after a storm, clean and fresh, washed of grime and refuse. He'd done evening patrol, checking over their beat to see everything was all right following the storm. Now he stood on top of the wall, waiting for the rest of his squad, who were still stowing their equipment. The sun had barely set, and it was time for dinner. Below, he picked out buildings newly scarred from lightning strikes. A pod of corrupted windspren danced past, trailing intense red light. Even the smell of the air was wrong somehow, moldy and sodden. Syl sat quietly on his shoulder until Beard and the others piled into the stairwell. He finally joined them, walking down below to the barrack where both platoons, his and the one they shared the space with, were gathering for dinner. Roughly 20 of the men from the other platoon would be on wall duty tonight, but everyone else was present. Not long after Kaladin arrived, the two platoon captains called their men to muster. Kaladin fell into line between Beard and Bed, and together they saluted as Azure stepped into the doorway. She was arrayed for battle, as always, with her breastplate, chain, and cloak. Tonight, she decided to do a formal inspection. Kaladin held attention with the others as she walked down their lines and commented quietly to the two captains. She looked over a few swords and asked several of the men if they needed anything. Kaladin felt as if he'd stood in similar lines 100 times, sweating and hoping that the general would find everything in order. They always did. This wasn't the type of inspection that was intended to actually find problems. This was a chance for the men to show off for their High Marshal. They swelled as she told them they just might be the finest platoons of fighting men I've ever had the privilege of leading. Kaladin was certain he'd heard those exact words from Amaram. Trite or not, the words inspired the men. They gave the High Marshal shouts of approval once they were given leave to break ranks. Perhaps the number of finest platoons in the army went up during times of war, when everyone craved a morale boost. Kaladin walked to the officer's table. It hadn't taken much work to get himself invited to dine with the High Marshal. Noro really wanted him promoted to lieutenant, and most of the others were too intimidated by Azure to sit at her table. The High Marshal hung her cloak and strange sword on a peg. She kept her gloves on, and though he couldn't see her chest because of the breastplate, that face and build were obviously female. She was also very Alethi, with the skin tone and hair, her eyes a glimmering light orange. She must have spent time as a mercenary out west, Kaladin thought. Sigzil had once told him that women fought in the west, particularly among mercenaries. The meal was simple curried grain. Kaladin took a bite, well acquainted by now with the aftertaste of soul-cast grain. A lingering staleness. The curry helped, but the cooks had used the boiled-off starch of the grain to thicken it, so it had some of the same flavor. He'd been placed relatively far from the center of the table, where Azure conversed with the two platoon captains. Eventually, one excused himself to use the privy. Kaladin thought for a moment, then picked up his plate and moved down the table to settle into the open spot.
Vale reached the top of the platform, entering what felt like a little village. The monastery structures here were much smaller, yet far nicer than the ones on the shattered plains had been. A cluster of fine stonework structures, with slanted wedge-shaped roofs, the points toward the origin. Ornamental shale bark grew around the bases of most of the buildings, cultivated and carved into swirling patterns. Vale took a memory for Shallan, but her focus was on the firelight coming from farther inward. She couldn't see the control building. All of these other structures were in the way. She could see the palace, off to her left, glowing in the night with windows lit. It connected to the Oathgate platform by a covered walkway called the Sunwalk. A small group of soldiers, visible in the darkness only as shadows, guarded the way across. Close to her, at the top of the steps, a rotund man sat along a shale-bark ridge. He had short hair and light green eyes, and gave her an affable grin.
"Welcome. I'm your guide tonight, for your first time at the revel. It can be, disorienting."
"Those are ardent robes," Vale noted, ripped, stained from what appeared to be a variety of foods.
"Everyone who comes up here," he said, hopping off his seat, "is reborn. Your name is now,
he pulled a piece of paper from his pocket.
"Where did I write that? Well, suppose it isn't important. Your name is Kishi. Doesn't that sound nice? Good job getting up here. This is where you'll find the real fun in the city."
He shoved his hands back in his pockets and looked down one of the roadways, then his shoulders slumped.
"Anyway," he said, "let's get going. Lots of reveling to do tonight. Always so much reveling to be done. And you are?
Me?
Harat is what they named me. I think? I forget.
He ambled forward without waiting to see if she followed. She did, eager to get to the center. However, just past the first building, she reached the revel and had to stop to take it in. A bonfire burned right on the ground, flames crackling and whipping in the wind, bathing Vale in heat. Corrupted flame spren, vivid blue and somehow more jagged, danced inside of it. Tables lined the walkway here, piled with food. Candied meats, stacks of flatbread crusted with sugar, fruits, and pastries. A variety of people passed by, occasionally scooping food off the tables with their bare hands. They laughed and shouted. Many had been Ardents, marked by brown robes. Others were light eyes, though their clothing had decayed. It seemed a fitting word for these suits with missing jackets, Hava dresses whose skirts were ragged from brushing the ground, Safehand sleeves ripped off at the shoulder and discarded somewhere. They moved like fish in a school, flowing from right to left. She picked out soldiers, both light-eyed and dark, in the remnants of uniforms. They seemed to take no note of her, or of Harat, standing to the side. She'd have to cut through the stream of people to get farther inward to the Oathgate control building. She started to do so, but Harat took her by the arm, steering her to join the flow of people.
"We have to stay to the outer ring," he said. "No going inward for us. Nope. Be happy. You get to enjoy the end of the world in style."
She reluctantly let herself be pulled along. It was probably best to do a round of the platform anyway. However, not long after starting, she began to hear the voice.
"Let go. Give up your pain. Feast. Indulge. Embrace the end."
Pattern hummed on her coat, his sound lost to the many people laughing and drinking. Harat stuck his fingers into some kind of creamy dessert, taking it by the handful. His eyes had glazed over, and he muttered to himself as he pushed the food into his mouth. Though others laughed and even danced, most showed that same glassy look. She could feel Pattern's vibrations on her coat. It seemed to counteract the voices, clearing her head. Harat handed her a cup of wine he'd scooped from a table. Who set this all up? Where were the servants? There was just so much food. Tables and tables of it. People moved in buildings they passed, engaging in other carnal delights. Vale tried to slip across the stream of revelers, but Harat kept hold of her.
"Everyone wants to go inward their first time," he said. "You aren't allowed. Enjoy this. Enjoy the feeling. It's not our fault, right? We didn't fail her. We were only doing what she asked. Don't cause a storm, girl. Nobody wants that."
He hung on to Vale's arm. So instead she waited until they passed another building and tugged him that way.
"Going to find a partner?" he asked, numb. "Sure, that's allowed. Assuming you can find anyone still sober enough to care."
They entered the building, which had once been a place for meditation, filled with individual rooms. It smelled sharply of incense, and each alcove had its own brazier for burning prayers. Those were now occupied for another sort of experience.
"I just want to rest a moment," she told Harat, peeking into an empty room. It had a window. She could slip out that, maybe. "It's also overwhelming."
"Oh." He looked over his shoulder toward the revel passing outside. His left hand was still coated with sweet paste. Vale stepped into the chamber. When he tried to follow, she said,
"I need a moment alone." "I'm supposed to keep watch on you," he said, and prevented her from closing the door.
"Then watch," she said, and settled down on the bench inside the cell, from a distance. He sighed and sat down on the floor of the hallway.
"Now what?"
A new face, she thought. What did he name me? Tishy. It meant mystery. She used a memory she'd drawn earlier in the day, that of a woman from the market. In her mind, Shallan added touches to the clothing. A hava, ragged like the others. An exposed safe hand. It would do. She wished she could sketch it, but she could make this work. Now what to do about her guard? He probably hears voices, she thought. I can use that. She pressed her hand to pattern and wove sound. Go, she whispered. Hang on the wall of the hallway outside next to him. Pattern softly hummed his reply. She closed her eyes and could faintly hear the words she'd woven to be whispered near Harat. Indulge. Get something to drink. Join the revel.
You going to just sit there? Harat called into her.
Yes.
I'm going to get something to drink. Don't leave.
Fine.
He rose, then jogged out. By the time he got back, she had attached an illusion of Veil to a ruby mark, then left it there. It showed Veil resting on the bench, eyes closed, snoring softly. Kishi passed Harat in the hallway, stepping with glassy eyes. He didn't spare her a second glance, and instead settled down in the hallway with a large cup of wine to watch Veil. Kishi joined the revel outside. A man there laughed and grabbed at her safe hand, as if to pull her toward one of the rooms. Kishi dodged him and slipped farther inward, flowing through the stream of people. This outer ring seemed to round the entire Oathgate platform. The secrets were farther toward the center. Nobody forbade Kishi as she left the flow of the outer ring, stepping between two buildings, heading inward.
The others stopped their small talk, and the officer's table grew very still as Kaladin settled down across from Azure. The High Marshal laced her gloved hands before herself. "Cal, is it?" she said. "The light-eyed man with slave brands. How are you finding your time in the Wall Guard?" "It's a well-run army, sir, and strangely welcoming of one such as myself." He then nodded over the High Marshal's shoulder. "I've never seen someone treat a shard blade so casually. You just hanging on a peg?" The others at the table watched with obviously held breaths. "I'm not particularly worried about anyone taking her," Azure said. "I trust these men." "It's still remarkable," Kaladin said. "Foolhardy, even." Across the table, two places down from Azure, Lieutenant Noro raised his hands silently toward Kaladin in a pleading way. "Don't screw this up, Cal." But Azure smiled. "I never did get an explanation for that Shashbrand soldier." "I never gave a proper one, sir," Kaladin said. "I'm not fond of the memories that earned me the scar." "How did you end up in this city?" Azure asked. "Sadeus's lands are far to the north. There are several armies of Voidbringers between here and there, by report." "I flew." "How about you, sir? You couldn't have been in the city long before the siege began. Nobody talks of you earlier than that time. They say you appeared right when the guard needed you." "Perhaps I was always here, but merely blended in. With those scars, they may not spell out danger as explicitly as mine, but they'd have been memorable." The rest of the table, lieutenants and the platoon captain, stared at Kaladin slack-jawed. Perhaps he was pushing too hard, acting too far above his station. He'd never been good at acting his station, though. "Perhaps," Azure said, "one shouldn't be questioning my arrival. Be thankful someone was here when the city needed them." "I am thankful," Kaladin said. "Your reputation with these men commends you, Azure, and extreme times can excuse a great deal. Eventually, though, you'll need to come clean. These men deserve to know who, exactly, is commanding them." "And what about you, Cal? She took a spoonful of curry and rice, men's food, which she ate with gusto. Do they deserve to know your past? Shouldn't you come clean? Perhaps. I am your commanding officer, you realize. You should answer me when I ask questions. I've given answers, Kaladin said. If they aren't the ones you want, then perhaps your questions aren't very good. Noro gasped audibly. And you, Cal, you make statements dripping with implications. You want answers? Why not just ask? Storms, she was right. He'd been dancing around serious questions. Kaladin looked her in the eyes. Why won't you let anyone talk about the fact that you're a woman, Azure? Noro, don't faint. You'll embarrass us all. The lieutenant thumped his forehead against the table, groaning softly. The captain lord, with whom Kaladin hadn't interacted much, had gone red-faced. They came up with this game on their own, Azure said. They're Alethi, so they need an excuse for why they're listening to a woman giving military orders. Pretending there's some mystery focuses them on that, instead of on masculine pride. I find the entire thing silly. She leaned forward. Tell me honestly, did you come here chasing me? Chasing you? Kaladin cocked his head. Drums sounded in the near distance. It took a moment for them, even Kaladin, to register what that meant. Then Kaladin and Azure threw themselves back from the bench at nearly the same time. To arms! Kaladin shouted. There's an attack on the wall!
The next ring inward on the Oathgate platform was filled with people crawling. Kishi stood at the perimeter, watching a multitude of men and women in ragged finery crawl past her, giggling, moaning, or gasping. Each seemed in the thrall of a different emotion, and each stared with an openly maddened expression. She thought she recognized a few from the descriptions of Light Eyes who had disappeared into the palace, though in their state, it was hard to tell. A woman with long hair dragging on the ground looked toward her, grinning with clenched teeth and bleeding gums. She crawled, one hand after another, her hava shredded, faded. She was followed by a man wearing rings glowing with stormlight, in contrast to his ripped clothing. He giggled incessantly. The food on the tables here rotted and was infested with decay spren. Kishi wavered at the edge of the ring. She should have kept to the outer ring. She didn't belong here. There was food aplenty behind her, laughter and reveling. It seemed to pull her back, inviting her to join the eternal beautiful walk. Within that ring, time wouldn't matter. She could forget Shallan and what she'd done. Just give in. Pattern hummed. Vale gasped, letting Kishi burst from her, light weaving collapsing. Storms. She had to be away from this place. It was doing things to her brain, strange things, even for her. Not yet. She pulled her coat tight, then picked her way across the street full of crawling people. No bonfire lit her way, only the moon overhead and the light of the jewelry the people wore. Storms. Where had they all gone for the storm? Their moaning, chittering, and babbling chased her as she crossed the street, then hurried down a dark pathway between two monastery buildings, inward, toward the control building, which should be right ahead. The voices in her head combined from whispers to a kind of surging rhythm, a thumping of impressions, followed by a pause, followed by another surge, almost like... She stepped between the buildings and entered a moonlit square, colored violet from Salus above. Instead of the control building, she found an overgrown mass. Something had covered the entire structure, like the Midnight Mother had enveloped the gemstone pillar beneath Urethiru. The dark mass pulsed and throbbed. Black veins as thick as a man's leg ran from it and melded with the ground nearby. A heart. It beat an irregular rhythm. Bum-ba-ba-bum, instead of the common ba-bum of her own heartbeat. Give in. Join the revel. Shallan,
Listen to me.
She shook herself. That last voice had been different. She'd heard it before, hadn't she? She looked to the side and found her shadow on the ground pointed the wrong way toward the moonlight instead of away from it. The shadow crept up the wall, with eyes that were white holes, glowing faintly.
I'm not your enemy, but the heart is a trap. Take caution.
Distantly, drums started sounding on the top of the wall. The void bringers were attacking. It all threatened to overwhelm her. The thumping heart, the strange processions in rings around it, the drums and the panic that the fused were coming for her because she'd been seen.
Vale seized control. She'd accomplished her goal, she'd scouted the area, and she had information about the Oath Gate. It was time to get out.
She turned and forcibly put on Kishi's face. She crossed the stream of crawling, moaning people. She flowed back into the outer ring of revelers before slipping out. She didn't check on her guide. She walked to the rim of the Oath Gate platform and, without a look back, leaped off.